Okay, we're going to reconvene the Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting. Mr. Gallagher, where are we now?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're with, at the Sheriff preliminary budget.
Okay, at that time, let me interrupt you for a second. And Commissioner Gilman, you have something to say?
Please, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, NRS 2818 requires me to disclose a conflict of interest. The sheriff's budget request is one of the many budget requests now under consideration before this body. As you may be aware, I recently filed a defamation lawsuit against Gerald Antonoro. As we are opposing parties in this lawsuit, I conclude that the independence of judgment of a reasonable person in my situation may be perceived to be materially affected by the circumstances that we are opposing parties in an outside lawsuit. Because this is clear case of a disqualifying conflict of interest between the two of us, I will be abstaining from voting or considering any part of his specific budget request or comments regarding the same, and any comments I make are not directed at the sheriff's budget request. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may procedurally then, with the concurrence of the district attorney, we would ask that as you hear the sheriff's budget, take action on it separate, immediately following the conversations and Hughes and perhaps the sheriff's input. But vote on that one separate to take action, and then Commissioner Gilman will be able to vote on all the remainder of the general fund, excluding the sheriff.
Okay. Manager Whitten, I think that's the best way to handle it so there is no confusion at all for the record.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Gallagher, you want to continue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Sheriff Department proposed budget is approximately is $1,041,000 higher than the previous budget. This represents a 32% increase over the last year's budget, and now makes the sheriff budget approximately 29% of the total general fund budget. The sheriff is requesting 9 additional deputy and correctional staff at a budgeted cost of $640,000. In addition, $13,000 in uniforms, $19,000 in enforcement supplies, $7,000 in pre-employment expenses, and $272,500 in vehicles were budgeted to support the staff increases. The staffing increases are a result of a change in the current staffing model from one deputy per sector to 2 deputies per sector. We looked at the sheriff's budget. We made no adjustments at the time. We will, as with most of our department heads, at the conclusion of this budget between now and the final, we will call everybody back in and see if there is a redetermination. Sheriff, you got comments?
Staffing changes, or proposed staffing changes, aren't necessarily just a change for more numbers out there. Based on many of the things that you've already heard here this morning, you heard the district attorney talk about increases in their caseload. That originates with us. You heard about the 911 calls into dispatch. Those initiate or oftentimes involve a deputy response. You've heard about, even though the fire chief has not been up here yet, you've heard about their actions on the I-80 corridor. While I-80 is not ours, it oftentimes generates a deputy's response because of the proximity to whatever it is that's going on there. All of these things have driven the need to have additional staffing. We've always strived to try and have 2 deputies on duty on this end of the county, the the south end of the county, with the increases being driven in the industrial park, it's now necessary to get that level of staffing on the north end of the county also. That's to cover both in the residential areas and the increased traffic volumes and issues arising out of the park's development. So while it is a sizable increase, if you look back over past years, we've held very closely, done hardly any growth over the last 5 years. So this is time that to meet the challenges of the future that we have to pursue these increases. Same thing is true in the jail, where we have had a daily population of 4 to 5 inmates with the inclusion of the Bureau of Indian Affairs contract. Now we're averaging 18 inmates a day. And it's just too difficult for one correction officer to handle that many inmates in a safe manner. And that's another factor. I mean, everybody knows recently we had a deputy that got shot. Safety for the deputies is a huge factor in all of this. I mean, a couple of the commissioners said, I believe county manager also commented, it's getting more and more technical all the time. So with that, that's what's driving the staff increases.
But, a 32% increase is pretty substantial. Much more substantial when you're already starting with a $3.25 million budget as opposed to if it was a $100,000 budget. So we're looking at percentages with other departments. It's not as significant when we're looking at dollar value. Because last year you didn't ask for any deputy increases, and now this year you're asking for 6. So that's a substantial increase.
Well, I've asked for increases over the years, but that's been one of the things that have been cut out because we've tried to get by with other things. I've asked for increases just about every single year.
Last year, I don't believe you asked for any additional deputies.
Well, there's a lot that goes on in the budget process before it ever gets to the county commissioners.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with that. We've been asking sheriffs probably since he took office if there was a need for additional staffing increases. In fact, when we were working one weekend to say what we were going to do relative to the Tesla reimbursement contract, the county manager asked the sheriff if he needed any additional help out in that district, and the answer was no, he did not need any additional. We did put, I think, an additional 1 or 2 in the following years, and so at least we've got some of that reimbursable cost, but that was a complete no at that point in time.
I believe the question was posed was what was going to be needed on the basis of Tesla, singularly, not what was posed over countywide.
Okay, it's also been brought to our attention that if the scheduling was to change, that it wouldn't require as many new deputies as well. That if you went from 10 to 12 hour shifts as opposed to the way it's scheduled now, that we just wouldn't need as much manpower.
Well, that's an inaccurate statement. Plus, a 12 hour schedule is not a safe schedule. There's plenty of studies that are out there supporting it, which is why we moved it from a 12 hour scheduling in the first place.
Okay, I want to move on to
I too.
Could you hold on for just one moment there, Jack? I just want to follow up on a couple more items, and then I'll let Commissioner McGuffey ask you some questions. But in the reference to wanting more vehicles, when I was in Lockwood on Friday, I counted 10 vehicles at the substation in Lockwood. So if we've got these vehicles that are just standing there dormant, why do we have these vehicles? Why do we need more vehicles if we already have vehicles that are sitting dormant now?
Vehicles that are sitting there are not just sitting there. So necessarily the deputies assigned to those vehicles may not be on duty. We can run vehicles around the clock, and we'll be going through them a lot quicker than what we are. Right now we're getting 5-6 years out of the vehicle. If we want to run them around the clock, we might get 2-3 years out of them.
So those 10 vehicles that are set are assigned to 10 different deputies, that they'll come and pick up an individual different car?
I believe that there's probably 7 or 8 deputies assigned to those vehicles, and then there's a couple of spares available.
Okay, just so I understand, each deputy is assigned their own patrol car?
That is correct.
Okay. In reference to your correctional officers in the jail, it was my understanding when we took on this BIA contract that we not only was it supposed to pay its own way, but it was supposed to actually turn a profit for the jail operations by housing the BIA inmates down there. But it looks like it's a negative for the county. It looks like it's going to cost the county money to actually house these people by the increase in the budget for more staffing and more supplies to the jail itself.
Well, yeah, there's going to be costs involved in it, but yes, those costs are greatly reduced by the monies from the BIA contract. If the BIA contract is paying in, and you subtract what we're actually gaining versus what we're actually paying, then we're going to be paying less than what we've been paying.
Okay, just so that we're clear, though, it's my understanding that if we receive $100,000 from the BIA, it should cost us less than $100,000 to provide those services for their inmates. Is that correct?
Well, I don't understand exactly what you're asking, but if we've been paying $500,000 to run the jail without the contract, and now we have an influx of $300,000 over the course of the year, that's $200,000 left.
Okay, if it costs us more now to operate the jail than the additional $100,000 we receive from BIA, then we're at a net loss, is what I'm saying.
Well, it's not costing us more than what we're paying. Or it's not costing us more than what we're receiving.
It's not.
If you look before the BIA contract, it was still...
Hold on for a second. Continue, Sheriff.
Before the BIA contract, we were still paying close to $400,000, I believe. I'm just pulling this up from memory, but I believe it was about $400,000 that we're paying to operate the jail. Now, if you look at the math, just breaking out the cost of running the jail, we're probably up to about $600,000, but if we're getting $300,000, that offsets that. I mean, we're still ahead. In the greater scheme of things, we the taxpayers are actually paying less to run that jail than what we were paying before.
Okay, then we are getting enough money to offset the expense of the additional inmates.
Yes, I believe we are.
Okay. All right, Commissioner McGuffey.
Well, the chairman pretty much hit on all the buttons I had to press. I do recall last year you stating you didn't need any more deputies due to Tesla. I too see all the vehicles sitting in the yard. You have summer vehicles, winter vehicles. I really question, is it saving the taxpayers any money? And when you got vehicles, summer vehicles, they're only driven 3 or 4 months out of the year, and then they sit, and we're still paying insurance and maintenance and registration and all that stuff. So I don't know. Maybe it is, but it just doesn't appear that way right now to me.
I can clarify. There is no summer vehicles and winter vehicles, and there's vehicles, period. Primarily, they are all assigned a vehicle. There are a couple of vehicles that are spares in the event one is broken down or something. There are those deputies that are assigned to a sedan, which in the event that it becomes necessary, which has only been a handful of occasions during the past year, where it requires a four-wheel drive, then they pick up one of the spares that's going to be a spare regardless, and they use that during the inclement weather. We don't have tons of vehicles just sitting around waiting for a specific season.
Yes. Of course, you've already answered the BIA issue. I was under the impression years ago when you were trying to get this together that it would really take a load off the county. But then But here's the bottom line, is you're already, the Sheriff's Department is already 45% of the general fund, and now you want to add another 32% on it. It's like, I don't think our taxpayers are going to like that a whole lot.
Well, I think your percentages are wrong. I think your percentages are wrong. It's not going to be 75% of the general fund. Unless I'm not keeping track of my math very good.
Yeah.
Public safety does take a large portion of the general fund.
So as it stands right now, sheriff budget would be 29% of the general fund. That's the correct statement.
Because you'd thrown the 45% number at me the other day before the budget. Or was that including his proposed budget?
No, the budget right now is 20. I don't know where that 45 came from. Commissioner, I'm not sure.
Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Pat, do you have any questions for you on
that? I got a couple. Excuse me. Relative to the jail, salaries that are budgeted are $516,000 plus another $281,000 in benefits. That's $787,000 in benefits. And that's with the additional people. In addition to that, the inmate food is at $50,000. Inmate medical is at $10,000. Inmate supplies is at $5,000. What we will do before the final budget is we'll take a look at the contract. We'll take a look at all of the expenses that are relative to that, to the BIA contract. The sheriff or I or both of us will make a presentation before the commission during the final. With regard to the vehicles, that would be approximately 32 vehicles now, of which some, when it snows up here, some of the vehicles are pretty much are sat, because if they're anything like my Impala, they don't go very well in snow. There was an election to do anything different with a four-wheel drive. But the critical thing that I was, when we were discussing, Sheriff, the vehicles, was you had mentioned that the practice of a deputy picking up his vehicle early instead of his POV to his destination was still happening. That was the comment you made.
Yes,
still happening.
They pick up a vehicle at their closest duty station and then respond to their specific area. If they live in Sparks, they pick up a vehicle in Lockwood if they're scheduled here.
Now, we had talked about this last year, and I was under the impression that would not happen anymore. And in my case, I think it's inherently dangerous for those people to pick up that vehicle early, off the clock, driving to their duty station, just because they don't want to drive their PLD to the duty station and perform the duties, then come back. I was under the impression from last year that this was not going to happen, and in fact still does happen, and that bothers me from a risk management issue. It really does.
And it has been a point of discussion. It was an item that was brought up during collective bargaining. It's been a long-standing thing that's gone back to 2009. While it's not a contractual thing, it was something that, in my recollection, was taken off of the table as far as discussion because of concessions made in the contract. And while we have discussed it on numerous occasions in the past, there's not been any clear-cut decision because of the practice having been going on since 2009. But as I've said before, when it comes to the vehicles, NRS is quite clear that you, as the county commissioners, control the vehicles.
Okay,
and if
well,
you
I
want
don't
the practice
any,
to stop, I'll stop the practice.
I'm just, I don't remember during any of our collective bargaining conversations that this was ever a discussion that had been approved for this to happen. I think that if the taxpayers knew that they were paying for your staff to drive county vehicles to and from work, I think that they might take issue with it. I, as a taxpayer, don't think that they should be driving a county vehicle to
and
from work.
Chairman McBride, it seems to me that anything that was discussed in a collective bargaining session is confidential. The thing that would, the document that would be the public record would be the actual contract itself. So what would be in the contract is, I believe, what we can talk about. But as far as
the sheriff has mentioned that it's not in the contract, the collective bargaining agreement. Right. And since I don't ever remember it being discussed, there was nothing discussed. So I don't think I'm divulging any information if it wasn't discussed.
Okay. Okay.
If I said it was discussed, then maybe there would be an issue. But since
the sheriff said it was discussed. So, see, that's what I'm talking about. So we're talking about not necessarily what you're saying. It's just the conversation itself because it comes down. And I could be wrong, but conservative is the best.
Very good. I don't know. I just think that we have to take a good a look at everything. When we're looking at a $1,042,000 increase in just one budget, I think we have to look at all avenues of trying to trim this to make it more palatable, I guess is the best word for it.
Can I do have some comments?
Okay. Go ahead, Pat.
You asked me for my comments and observations, and I have a few. I think, Mr. Chairman, you hit it very accurately when you referenced the percentage comparisons. It's one thing for a district attorney's office to go from 543,000 to 867,000, knowing that almost 300,000 of that is earmarked and restricted for the special cases that we've talked about and may not get spent. But when the day's done, you know, that percentage of the increase is still hovering around $330,000 for a million plus on a $3.25 million budget. That's a huge chunk. So percentage-wise and dollar-wise, more importantly, I think are major concerns to me. I ran this office for 6 years, and I understand and get that times have changed, and I don't disagree that we need more coverage out there. But what is the right level, and how do you get there is probably the more germane issue. We've struggled with this over the years. I would disagree patently, and there may be studies. There probably are studies. There's studies for everything about drinking red wine. It's good for you. It's bad for you. But to be very candid with you, I know when I was sheriff, and I hate using those words, that my troops loved the 12-hour shifts. I think we could probably pull any random deputy off the shift off the street right now and say, would you prefer an 8, a 10, or a 12? And I bet you the majority by far are going to be 12. The day divides up, a 24-hour day divides up either by 8 or 12. 12 is the most effective way because we don't have to hire as many people as an 8-hour shift. You can cover an area with two deputies or four deputies if you have double coverage versus covering it with six. But the bottom line is the clock doesn't divide by 10. You've got overlaps, you've got excess, and I would, again, strongly disagree that just to take on the surface that 12-hour shifts are unsafe. We've been encouraging those for quite some time. I will stay silent on the CBA other than to confirm statements that this has not been our practice and or our desired practice and, in fact, has been a concern for a number of reasons from a liability standpoint. We've got, as Hugh mentioned, you have people that are not on the clock driving their cars. And I will tell you, we do have a few exceptions where people live out of county and they've been authorized under our policy, the county policy that the Board of Commission adopted. They've been authorized to take home vehicles. Someone like Dean Haymore, we've got a special circumstance in public works right now where I don't have to pay standby time, you know, because that person lives in Mount House and they're able to take a truck home and bam, respond. This practice of picking up a car in Virginia City and driving it out to the River District or vice versa, I think is not good business, period. So those would probably be my big three. And relative to staffing, I'm not suggesting that we don't need to increase staff. We need to be smarter about how we increase and where. And I think putting a heavy red pencil to this could pare it down conceivably. There are 12-hour scheduling models out there. I do recall a slightly varied version of what the sheriff mentioned. We did ask, point blank, you know, what do you need because of Tesla? Tesla, the answer was, I don't need anything. And as Commissioner McGuffey mentioned, the sheriff did stand up last year when we were struggling with increasing his office admin staff from 1.5 to 2. I believe he said on the record, I don't need no deputy. I believe that was pretty much the exact phrase. I need this admin person. And now we've gone from not needing any to needing 6. And we will be modeling the cost effectiveness of the BIA contract because from what I have heard from others, it is not necessarily that good of a deal for us. So that's my input this time around.
Okay. Thank you. Sheriff, do you care to follow up with anything or rebut anything that's been said?
Well, I say the staffing model came about at the request of the comptroller, asking me what it is that I need. So we put together a staffing model. That's how we came up with the numbers. It's a very simple number. It doesn't really matter what the shifts are, 10, 12, otherwise, contrary to what the county manager says, there are X amount of hours in a year, and this is the what you'll find in the staff study. There are X amount of hours in a year that have to be covered. To reach a certain level of coverage, that number is equated to calculate out how many bodies we need. I don't care if you're working on 4-hour shifts, 12-hour shifts, or 24-hour shifts. You still can only get so many hours of work out of an employee, period. And that's where those numbers come from, to have 2 deputies on staff at any given time on either end of the county, because that's all we're talking about. I'm not talking about 16 people out there. I'm talking about having 1 person in the residential area and 1 person in the industrial park 24 hours a day. 1 person in Virginia City and 1 person either in the Highlands or Mark Twain. 24 hours a day. It's not based on shift length. It's not based on any particular pattern of coverage. It's based on how many hours you can work an employee in a year and still allow for their allocated leave time that is given to them. Shift length doesn't matter. It's how many hours you can get out of an employee. And unless you can figure out a way I can get more hours out of an employee, it really doesn't matter what shift length they're on. You still have that same amount of hours to work with.
Okay, well, that gives us some time between today's tentative budget and the final budget. It gives us time to look at some scheduling models to see if there is a way to work it out so that you don't need as many bodies to cover.
I'd like to ask a question. Do you know what that number is, Sheriff?
I believe the number that's used in the staff study is 1,880 hours because the average employee works 2,080 hours, and then the time that they're allocated off their leave time as allowed by the contract and what they accrue equals to just about 5 weeks. So you go from the 2,080 down to 1,880, and now they may not take all that time off. They may not take annual leave. They may not call in sick, but you have to be able to cover that if they are. So you're left with 1,880 hours you can count on an employee working in a year.
So if we're budgeting, and I apologize, I don't have the number at hand, but if we're budgeting somewhere in the vicinity of $60,000 for patrol in overtime, and you have what I will call basically a a slush fund of 200 hours per employee, regardless of what schedule they're on. Are you telling us that if you got every deputy that you're asking for in here, that there would be absolutely zero overtime?
No, I can't say that, and that's ludicrous to even ask, because you know there's still court, there is still training, there are things, if somebody's working a graveyard shift, that requires their attendance during the day. Those things happen, we all know it. So, no, I cannot tell you there would be zero overtime.
Well, you've
accounted. But I can tell you that there'd be one heck of a lot less, because I wouldn't be calling people in all the time.
Okay. We will follow whatever you direct.
Anything else, Mr. Gallagher?
Nothing, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, just a statement. You know, I think you're asking the taxpayers to give you another over $1 million. And I don't think they're going to like it. That's
it. All right. Since the recusal of Commissioner Gilman, we're going to go ahead and... give me a minute. Okay. Then we're going to go ahead and I'll ask for a motion to approve the sheriff's budget standalone before we go back into the rest of the general. And so with that being said... at this time, we'll go ahead and take any public comment on this. That's all, Mike. This is.
Yeah. Excuse me. Mike Nevin, Public Works Director. As part of my responsibility, I oversee the fleet service. And I think that if you're going to add 9 vehicles, I don't know who's going to take care of them. Honestly, we're about maxed out up there with 2 guys and 1 guy coming in part-time when we need him. So just keep that in mind. I mean, I don't care how many vehicles you buy and, you know, for us to maintain, but there's staffing requirements that are, you know, going to hit that section as well, because somebody has to take care of these vehicles. You know, just because you buy a new vehicle doesn't mean that it's not maintained. So I just want you to keep that thought out there, too.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other public comment on the sheriff's budget? Hearing none, at this time I'll go ahead and ask for a motion to approve the sheriff's budget, tentative budget. And then, of course, there's going to be continued conversations between the sheriff and the comptroller's office with the budget team to before we get to the final.
I'll make a motion to approve the sheriff's fiscal year 2016-17 annual budget.
I'll second your motion.
Before you call for a vote, may I just ask for clarification? Do you have any direction to staff as part of that motion, or do you just want us to continue to attempt to work?
This is a tentative budget. It has to be continued. Do I need to add that in the motion?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. I'll move to approve the sheriff's fiscal year budget. A tentative fiscal year budget 2016-2017 with regards to addressing issues that we've brought up today.
I'll second your motion. Any other discussion on this? Okay, so we move to second to approve the sheriff's 2016-2017 budget. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Going to move into fire district now?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, then at this time we're going to go ahead and recess as the Spring County Board of Commissioners, and we will convene the 474 Fire Protection District Board. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. I consider Chief Haynes the Michelangelo of budget preparation. He has always done a great job, and I am forever trying to go back through to find out what he hid. And so far, I haven't been able to figure that out, but congratulations. The 474 Fire District revenue is projected to increase about $1 million over the budget for 2016, of which a majority of the funding is in the form of intergovernmental funding. Equipment sales and charges for services amount to $280,000. That it should be noted again, as it was in the general, that ad valorem is projected to be about $50,000 less than last year, as will be licensing and permits. Fire department expenses increased about $1.4 million, primarily due to the addition of one additional fire company at the Tahoe Regional Industrial Park that was predicated by the arrivals of Tesla, Switch, and everybody else that followed. The Fire Emergency Fund has an ending fund balance of $207,141. That was created by Resolution 07240 under the direction of NRS 474460 through 474550. The Fire Emergency Fund must be used for emergencies and not to be used for operating expenses. NRS 474510 established a threshold of $1 million. Anything over this amount must be credited to the Fire Operating Fund. It is the intention of the Fire Chief and the County Manager to fund this account to the statutory limit. And as we were with emergency mitigation, as we will be with stabilization of those funds, a catastrophe that that would hit either anywhere in Story County to include the islands, this certainly wouldn't be, this may be one day's worth of funding. So that's why we're particularly, we would particularly like to increase this fund. Mutual aid. Special Revenue Fund was created by Resolution 12356 in August of 2012 to account for all the employees and billings outside the 474 Fire District. I would like to suggest that we reserve portions of this ending fund balance for future purchases of heavy equipment. Chief Haynes will also have another fund at the final budget. It will be a capital improvement plan, which will be, again, a special revenue fund for which the capital improvement plan that you adopted during the last meeting that I was not here at can be initialized and ready for operation. That concludes my comments on the 474 Fire District, Mr. Chairman.
Jack, do you have any comments on this?
Well, am I reading this right, where the fire district is asking for another $1 million as well?
No, Commissioner McGuffey, we would like to get it to the statutory limit, understanding that a fire catastrophe somewhere or anywhere within Story County is probably, you know, the $207,000 is simply not enough. And I think through the efforts of the fire chief and the county manager that we can continually increase. We're not going to bump it this year, but periodically, as funds become available, increase this to the statutory limit.
This is primarily because of the Station 74?
No. Although some of the revenues potentially could be used to fund that. And I think you're referring to 75 probably, more than 74. That's our preparing facility.
Right.
to be candid with you, the way I like to think of this is we have a stabilization fund that we'll get to shortly. Statutory limit is 10% of your last year's expenses. And that is our rainy day fund. This would be the fire district's rainy day fund, but only in certain emergencies. I'd welcome Chief Hayes to come up to tell us how much it costs to battle a wildland fire per day if you have a type 1 overhead event, with the aerial support and those types of things.
Thank you, County Manager Witten. Gary Hayes for the record, District Fire Chief. Just to give you one component of what may occur is a type 1 strike team, for example, and that's five pieces of structural firefighting equipment with four personnel per piece of apparatus, is about $28,000 a day. So that's just one component. If there was a fire in the Highlands, Mark Twain, Lockwood, you're going to look at three or four of those out the gate. So just that component alone is $75,000, not counting aircraft. I couldn't pretend to even begin to tell you how much aircraft would cost. It just depends on if we have seats available versus heavy air tankers versus the very heavy air tankers. What status that's dead, I'd be pretending if I even begin to tell you in the dollar amount.
Chief Hayes,
there's too many variables.
Could we reflect them maybe on a couple of East Fork fires or one East Fork fire? They got hit really hard.
I can give you the Bison fire, which was 3 years ago. They had $1 million established in their emergency fund. They wiped that out in the first 16 hours. They ended up going about $16 million for that fire in total cost. So, but unless we have this $1 million established and we keep trying to chunk away at this every year like we've been doing, it's really difficult to even match FEMA grants. If we were successful in a federal fire management assistance grant, we still have to pay 25% of those costs. That's where that $1 million would come into play. And to be quite honest, with the NDF participation that we fund, which is 100 and I don't want to give you a bad number. It was $150,000 a year. That's going to be a drop in the bucket as well. Once we start losing, or if we were to lose structures in a wildland fire, and I shouldn't even say if, I mean, it's a matter of time. There's going to be a catastrophic fire somewhere in our county.
I agree.
It's going to happen. So hopefully we're planning it ahead. I'm trying to build that particular fund up to the $1 million, so at least we're not bankrupt, to be honest, after a catastrophic fire.
Yeah, and withdrawals to that fund are heavily regulated. Again, we'll take a declaration of emergency. There are a number of elements that would have to come into play before we could just reach in and say, well, let's go buy Subway sandwiches for the fire. It's not intended for that.
Yeah. This is for the big, big stuff.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. That's a great question.
Any questions for Gary, please?
No, sir.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Okay. Anything else on that, Mr. Gallagher?
That's it, Mr. Chairman.
All right. This time we'll ask any public comment on the 474 Fire District's budget. Hearing none, call for a motion to approve it.
I'll make a motion to approve Gary's tentative budget at this time.
I'll second that motion.
Moved and seconded to approve the tentative budget for the Fire District's 474 budget. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, we're going to go ahead and adjourn as the 474 Fire Protection District Board, and we will reconvene as the Story County Board of Commissioners.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Equipment acquisition. This is a special revenue fund that is primarily used for the purchase obligations within the roads and the 474 Fire District. Continued use of this fund is for the 474 Fire District goes to pay off the USA obligation of $2 million for structure engines and ambulances. It is funded by ad valorem. We expect about $423,000 of revenue, and our obligations on that existing debt is about $244,000. Next comes the commissioners. Within the general fund, the commissioners' budget increased about $65,000 over the prior budget, primarily due to salary reclassifications and community support allocations. $10,000 is appropriated to each community within Story County to assist with projects or emergencies as they arise. As you may know, this was originally in Sherry Nevin's community relations budget. We felt that it would be a better use that we probably should put this in the commissioner's budget. Thereby, the commissioners can make the initial request and have the payment delivered.
Can I jump in? Cool. So let's focus mostly, if we can, on the $40,000 increase for the community support areas. This was a dream of Bill Chevangin, Commissioner Chevangin, when he was on the commission. I think he pioneered this. We wanted to establish $10,000 for each of the communities that either a commissioner or the commission could say, this is where I want to throw the support. For instance, I would tell you that we've used, can't think of where we used $10,000 before, but I know we have as things. We spent, I believe it was $1,500 this past weekend in unallocated monies to support the Big Bonanza next door, because it was such a worthy cause and such an important positive impact on the community. Washoe County does this now, and we think they stole Bill's idea, is they gave each commissioner a pool of money. And a set of processes that we'll hammer out that again say, okay, these would be the types of things that, that you may want to incent foster. We could reestablish, and not that it isn't, but you know, give a turbo boost to the community garden in Lockwood if we chose to, or potentially use this for flood mitigation, you know, down in Mark Twain. In the Highlands, you know, there has been talk, and I'm not weighing in on a GID or not a GID. I just am fully supportive of looking at potential solutions for the water issues that are out there and will always be out there for the most part. And this might be something that Commissioner McGuffey could turn to us and say, I think I'd like to help fund a study of the feasibility, you know, potentially of a GID. So it's our hope that we can redo this every year. Now, I do want to stress with this, both this and the park fund, which we've already talked about, but particularly with this fund, this is not an evergreen amount, okay? This is a general line item budget. And the way the general budget works, the general fund, is nothing rolls over as a line item. You have to reestablish it every year. And in some years, that's pretty difficult. So I would want to correct the differences that may have been misstated in prior years, is that if we don't use 10 this year, does that mean we can have 20 the next year? And that answer is generally no, because it's a general fund line item basis. That doesn't mean that we might not be able to reach somewhere else for an extra $2,000 or $3,000 for something worthy. I mean, we're still working, I think, on and committed, as far as I know, to the paving of Cartwright Road. From the fire station to the beginning of the county portion. So I would see this as each of your individual discretionary funds to work with us as staff. We'll work on a simple set of procedures, you know, that does this, but they're for what you think might be worthy in the individual communities that we serve.
Thank you, Pat. Next comes the administrative budget. They project an increase of $646,000 over last year's budget. Additional staffing positions plus employee reclassifications amounted to about $150,000, an increase in the Tahoe Regional Industrial, the tri-payback was about $477,000, an increase in NACO contributions of $11,000 represented the majority of the increase. Next is health services. This department increased $17,800 over the last budget year due to increase in youth services of $10,000 and rural child protective services of $6,000. This is partly handled by Susan Breilinger, who's done a tremendous job with taking on this project and still trying to keep Mike Nevin in line. Planning budget decreased $7,200 over last year, mainly due to the reduction of professional services needed to complete the master plan. Mr. Osborne and his planning staff decided to take this project basically in-house, and really should be congratulated on the performance of this. This is a living, breathing monster of a document that they have put a tremendous amount of time and effort and part of their soul into, and great work, Austin. Did a good job.
And I think I want to piggyback on that, if I may. Again, this is smart management of taxpayer dollars. Austin lost a planner sometime last year, I believe, and in the process looked around, and we had a Story County local that said, hey, I'm kind of interested, and Jason Van Havel came on. I wish Jason was here to hear the praise I want to heap on him and Austin, but the quality of this plan, our last plan was done in 1994, I believe, plus or minus. It was a good plan. You know, these are also the plans that many local government jurisdictions farm out to an independent consultant that costs hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Austin knew fairly early on in the process that we would probably need some specialty consultation and help, if you will, in areas perhaps such as transportation or some of those. In comes Jason Van Havel with a rich, high-level background at NDOT. Boom, transportation plan is done. And I would probably not call this a nightmare of a document. We're only about 6 months out from this, I think, maybe even a month less. You know, just finishing the details, drawing the maps, doing those kind of things, which isn't just. But I would tell you, this is going to be an epic masterpiece by the time it's done. It's going to be a document that we know we're going to have to come back to and update and change periodically. But this gives us that great base. And really, for a team of 2.5 people between Austin and I can't even count Austin as a half with everything else he does. But, you know, with the team of Austin, Jason, and Lindy, again, another Story County local, I would put our planning department up against any other planning department anywhere. So, that's it.
All right, thank you, Pat. Next is Indigent Medical. This was created under Resolution 9726 in September of 1997. It's an oldie. Under the direction of NRS 428 Indigent Persons, revenue is received from a 10%, a 10-cent rate, or a 1-cent rate of ad valorem and centrally assessed taxes. Again, this is administered by Susan Breilinger, along with our next fund, Indigent Accident, follows the directive of NRS 244-160. The Board of County Commissioners shall have the power and jurisdiction in their respective counties to take care and provide for the indigent sick of the county in such a manner only as is or may be provided by law. Indigent Accident, they receive some funds from ad valorem and centrally assessed. And the expenditures are handled by Susan Breiler.
And if I may, backing up to Indigent Medical here for a minute, and I'm not 100% sure of my numbers, but I'm pretty darn sure. This is one of those examples of smart management and taking advantage of the economies of being a small-sized county. Susan, again, has done a phenomenal job in using this appropriately with a set of discipline and very smartly, very intelligently. I will tell you, I believe by law, we can charge an indigent medical rate on ad valorem of up to 7 cents, I'm pretty sure. This has been at one since Susan's time. We lowered that by 6 cents off the rate. And that just tells you what smart money management can do with it.
Thank you, Pat. Our next special revenue fund is capital projects. When it was decided to look at county-wide projects either through infrastructure or capital outlay, a list of possible projects was assembled. That list totaled roughly $7 million in potential projects. It has been suggested that these items that would fall outside the infrastructure list would be picked up by allocating general fund revenues to cap projects. The revenues infused, this fund comes from contributions from Tesla to assist in the purchase of a Quint fire ladder truck. It should be noted that the relocation of the Justice Court will also be appropriated to this fund. And we infused this a couple of years ago because we do have projects that are outside the scope of the plan that we adopted last year on the infrastructure plan. So it's something there. It is a moving document. It's not set by any resolution, but we certainly talk about it when we're thinking about it, and when we're about to do it, and when we do do it. Infrastructure is a special revenue fund that gets its funding from the quarter cent sales tax. That fund was approved last year for the relative expenses of that, and it totaled about $7.5 million, of which we're drawing that down to include for replacement of the Lakeview water line, the possible V&T depot purchase, V&T railroad restoration, Gold Hill depot restoration, and we purchased the DA sheriff building with those funds. In addition, we've got funds projected for Mark Twain and Lockwood, some of it for flood control and for road repair and county drainage and erosion in the industrial park area. We've also got some stuff for painted rock and some communication that concerns a Cascadian Patriot Vista system, of which I have absolutely no clue what that is. We will, in the upcoming months, be having a list between now and the final. We'll get with County Manager Whitten and all the department heads to see what additional funding may or may not be available for other projects. Tri-Payback is a special revenue fund that we created under resolution number 06218 in May of 2006. Revenues derived from transfers from the general fund from equipment acquisition and from the 474 Fire District fund this particular fund, and the expenses follow the NRS 354, or actually they follow audits that are provided to us from Coon Clagney on an annual basis, and currently I think our debt sits around right around $46 million. I missed that one. I'll go back to it. We had to increase the funding for the tri-payback because we were it's catching up. And what we received from revenues this current year was approximately $4 million. And so we expect our payback to be relatively high after the audit of at the end of this fiscal year. So each of those representative funds got tagged with an additional overage. Stabilization is a special revenue fund created by resolution number 06218 dated May of 2006. Revenues are derived from transfer from the general fund, and expenditures follow NRS 354-6155 guidelines, and the balance in the fund must not exceed 10% of the expenditures from the general fund for the previous year. Go ahead.
We may try on this one. We've never had to tap this, while many local governments during the downturn did. But it is always prudent to keep it funded to its legal limits. So what we may look at, depending on our successes or not of higher than anticipated ending fund balances, is we may, between tentative and final, look at increasing, not the amount that we would intend to draw, I'll explain that in just a minute, but increasing this rainy day fund, if you will, up to its legal maximum of 10%, because the general fund has grown over the years, even on expenditures last year. So 10% is probably hovering maybe around 1.2, 1.3 million. So we'd like to get more money in there. And then the theory is the reason why right now you're looking, the fund itself has the $1 million that we achieved back probably in about 2007, 2008 as we were coming out of at a financial disaster. Alan Cault, who is the Churchill County Comptroller, but more importantly sits on the Committee of Local Government and Finance, challenged us to establish this stabilization fund. And the general rule of thumb is, if you think about how long the last downturn lasted about 5 years, you'd be fiscally imprudent if you drew all $1 million the first year just to sustain your operations. So the whole idea is you will probably always see a proposed draw of about 20% of whatever the fund balance is. That would get us through 5 years. And hopefully you will always see, and we will always see, us really never needing this fund. It's just a rainy day fund.
And what would trigger that?
What was that?
What would trigger that?
There are some statutory things. You have to have a reduction in revenues of a substantial percent. I can't remember. It's either 8 or 10%. There are a number of parameters, again, set by statute, but I can certainly get those and have those ready for the final budget meeting. But there again, most of these funds are very heavily regulated by statute. You know, we can't just decide, let's fund the Christmas party afterwards next year.
Okay. Do we have a fund for that?
Yes, that's what the commissioner's fund is. So. Yes, go ahead. You keep going. I'll see if I can find it.
Past researching. Our next special revenue fund is the Virginia City Railroad project. The Virginia City Railroad project is currently operating under resolution number 11-322 dated April 5th, 2011. Currently, there is a continuing audit of the V&T Rail Commission to determine if expenditures paid by that commission are within the scope of an interlocal agreement that was effective January 1st, 2011. We have been at this for quite some time. I expect a resolution of this by the final budget date. There have been numerous meetings, and it's about to get a little intense, as I may say, and I don't have any problem with that. But there will be, I am hoping, I am projecting for a resolution to this matter and going before the commission during the final budget.
let me chime in on this one.
Yep, absolutely.
Do you know the call date on the bond?
Call date on the bond, I think, is a time in 2017.
Okay, so we'll be keeping our eye on that, too. Our first window of opportunity to potentially pay off the bond will come sometime in the next year. We will not arbitrarily pay it off. We'll sit down with each of you, probably individually first and then collectively, and say, you know, how realistic is the Tunnel 6 project? What are our acquisition opportunities? Because this bond was structured in such a way that it had to benefit rail-related projects in either Virginia City or Gold Hill. So we'll take a look at how viable they are versus the interest load that we're carrying. I might mention, though, that a 25%, Jesse, I think, is that a rebate on this thing? But yeah, we get from the federal government a 25% refund of interest that we're paying on the bond, because this was structured in such a time that I think the feds offered the ARRA, the Recovery Act monies, and this was done under that guise. So,
is this a shovel-ready project?
That is kind of correct.
I should mention that since I'm thinking May of 2014, because of some answers that we did not get from the V&T Rail Commission, we have withheld funds from disbursing that, mainly because they part of the interlocal agreement was that they were supposed to give us a letter when their expenses exceeded revenue, and they simply have not done that since the interlocal agreement was initiated in January of 2014. So currently, that balance is sitting at right around $439,000. As I said, I'm hoping to get all of this put to bed by the final.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Next comes our federal grants. And talking to Sherry Nevin, who does such an excellent job providing us with information on grant funding. CBDG has not allowed it allocated anything to us from the upcoming fiscal year, and grants are starting to deplete for some reason or another. But Sherry's still out there trying to figure out, you know, the avenues and where we can go to get additional funding. And currently, that is sitting at somewhere about. Hopefully, 787 of grant money we will receive next year. Hopefully. Next becomes our final special revenue fund, which is the Virginia City Tourism Commission. Their revenue is expected to increase $140,000 over last year, mainly due to first-time revenue derived from the way it was rodeo of $100,000. And cemetery gin sales of $46,000. Expenses are projected to increase $119,000 over the last year, of which $80,000 is projected for the rodeo and $25,000 for the cemetery gin expenses. This fund still pays for operations from license fees, gaming fees, grants, and room tax, excuse me, and tourism fees, which will be not enough to sustain this fund in the long run. And we've been talking about this a couple of years now. They need a sustainable field or sustainable stream of revenue to which to operate. I will have some suggestions as we are still trying to formulate this. During the final, to see if the commission has an appetite for that, and with that,
the BCTC board though has approved this budget, right? The advisory board.
Yeah, it has gone through the advisory board. And I'm pretty sure this is the budget that Nicole mentioned and probably will on the public comment that there's a difference between this and the one that Denny presented, maybe, and there may be if it is. We're approving the tentative budget by the Story County Commission by our numbers. And so if there is a discrepatory or an incorrect amount, we can certainly get this done between the tentative and final. So basically what we have, sitting here is general fund is about at a $1.7 million in the general fund a deficit. And when you take into consideration the contingency and the transfers, it's about $1.9 million. That's not good. This is not anybody's fault. This is the way the budget process goes. I am not happy with the number. And what happens is that between now and the final budget, there are going to be additional reviews of almost every single budget, every single line item, to make sure that we have an appropriate number that the commission can approve. Any suggestions the commission has for me and any directions that they want of me, I will certainly entertain that and go through with it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher.
May I add?
Yes. Chime in.
Before it hopefully comes to board comment, public comment, and a vote on the general, excluding the sheriff, I'd like to just give you some perspective and, again, give my annual thanks, which every year grows in terms of appreciation. Changes in the 2015 legislative session now allow us to schedule our final budget hearing, I believe it's any time during the third week of May, leaving us flexible. Before, we used to have to hear our budget on the first Monday of May. I think the VCTC, when it was considered a separate local government, was the third Thursday or something like that. It would be our intent right now with that flexibility. We'll work with the clerk on making proper public notice, because we probably would just schedule it as a regular portion of the May 17th commission meeting, which is the third Tuesday. So no need to jockey our calendars around for that unnecessarily. And I have to tell you, this process, even with the $1.7, $1.9 million, current deficit looking just a tentative, all in, the group now that works this is an amazing group. There were multiple meetings with each department head and elected official, sometimes first looking at staffing and then looking at all the rest of the numbers. That included, I wasn't in those meetings, but that included a meeting with me over the commission and the administrative budgets. These, like always, like you can imagine, when you look at these documents, there are countless hours in here. So I want to recognize Hugh for his leadership, Jesse, Austin, and our new gal that has joined in and been invaluable in the process, and that's Jen McCain. We met, I think, a week ago last Saturday in my office, and I think we spent close to 13 hours going over all these budgets. And there's a lot of work besides those 13 hours that are in there by this team, so I think they did a great job. That's it.
All right. We can open this up for public comment. Nobody? Well, we have a healthy fund ending balance, but I don't want to see it evaporate by one-third by having a shortfall of almost $2 million. So it appears as though there's quite a bit of work to do between now and May the 17th. Jack, do you have any closing thoughts on this?
No. I have a question.
this board asked staff to take a hard look here during the last year at a property tax rollback for the residents of Troy County as a gesture of the profitability that we're starting to see within the county. And I haven't heard that addressed yet today.
I can certainly address that, Mr.
I'm sorry?
I can certainly address that.
I would really appreciate that.
Property tax rollback. We have spent a considerable amount of time looking at this, and it is my opinion at this point in time that under the current conditions that we're in, understanding where we are in the state economy, the United States economy, maybe the global economy, understanding we have no idea what the state legislature is going to do next year, and that the possibility of a recession is there. I decided to leave the current tax rate as it is. I have spent a considerable amount of time on a tax position or a tax rollback, and what I have found is that in one instance a tax rollback of 10 cents, which is that's a major, would equal to about $31 per parcel, and a tax reduction of 20 cents would be about $65 per parcel. Now, to understand this, you also have to understand the cap rate. And the cap rate sits right now at 2.8%, which means that it's going to take a considerable amount of time to for us to recoup any of the tax rate, even with a reduction in the rate. I will say that we had currently with the Department of Taxation, our assessed valuation has gone from $421,000 in 2016 to projected $461,000 in 2006 for the 16 and 17. So that's $20 million that in an increase that we will never see because of the cap. So considering that, when you receive your tax bill on in July or whatever, you will be probably paying more taxes than you did last year because you haven't eaten up the cap. The other thing, the other dilemma that I have is that what is on the horizon, and the fact that if and when, let's say the legislature gets rid of the cap, who knows what they're doing? There's some mention of California Prop 13. It's all over the board. And the fact that there's going to be some very new senators come January because of what happened that last day in the legislature last year, we just don't know. And I would hate to put Story County in a situation, I know nobody else would either, to where all of a sudden we have absolutely zero, a very little amount to operate. There are suggestions that are out there on the board, and one of the suggestions is that we look at some sort of a rebate. Never been done before, according to the Department of Taxation people and some of the people on the legal end. We are looking at seeing if there is anything out there that prohibits this. But basically what will happen is we will have a baseline that the general fund can operate. Whatever that ending fund balance is, we will justify what that baseline is. And anything over that will become an amount that is rebated back to our stakeholders. It is simple. It doesn't have as many moving parts as the tax rate does, because we have absolutely no idea about what they're going to do about the tax rate. That's what scares me. But this is fairly simple. It's on operations. We have all been very, and all the departments have been very, very good at looking at their budgets and getting that to as close as we can. That's why we have to, every audit, we have to single out 3 or 4 or 5 funds and send the Department of Taxation our opinions on how we're going to correct the action. And the corrective action is that we don't over explode expenses. It's what we think it's going to be. We don't pad anything. There's very little fat in this budget at all. So with that, Mr. Vice Chairman, that's my recommendation. I am. Doesn't mean we're not going to give up on this yet, because there may be something between now and the final that we may be able to do this, but at this particular time, with everything in the on the horizon, I don't think it is. But I think the alternative is, if we can go that direction, is can be very, very good.
So, if I understand this from a layman's perspective, is that we would, the county, set a operating floor amount that we would hold, and the amount over and above that floor would be distributed to the residents, to the property owners within the county, as stakeholders. And so what it sounds to me like is the better job the county and the departments do in running at a fiscally responsible level, there would be more revenue to actually allocate. So it would be to all of our benefits to do a very, very frugal job on operating from our county level. Does that fit?
That fits. I think in the long run, once we reestablish that base of where the ending fund balance is, where the general fund has that operational threshold, I think those rebates are probably going to be they're certainly going to be higher, and probably continue, whereas the tax rate reduction may not.
I really generally like the sound of that. I think that's a wonderful concept. That would make everybody in this county a part of, as stakeholders within our success with this. That just sounds wonderful to me.
Well, we're looking at a bump. We're looking at a bump in ad valorem collection in the next year, but the overall taxes collected are going to be down for overall.
Yep.
So we have less money coming in and budgets going up, and a tentative shortfall of, you know.
It doesn't balance, does it?
I might add that NACA did appoint two commissioners, one from Clark County, and the other is Doug from Douglas County. I can't remember his last name.
Doug Johnson.
They're basically a special committee to look at this tax cap issue that's going through the state, because every county is suffering from it, because there's a 2.8% cap on what they can tax. Now the property goes down in value, that's great for them, but now the properties are coming back is still set at that 2.8. In fact, next year I think Story County is going to only be 1.93 or something less. So the thing is we tried to do a nice thing for all the taxpayers in Nevada, but we kind of shot ourselves in the foot at the same time, because now that everything's coming back, the tax rate isn't keeping up with it. So we're losing money, basically. So NACA has assigned a committee to look at adjusting that so that it does kind of rebound with the economy, the tax rates. As far as details, there's no hard details. It's just it's in conversation now.
It's good for government. It's bad for taxpayers.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Okay, so we've heard all of the budget. We've approved the water and sewer board budget. We've approved the 474 fire budget. We have approved the sheriff's budget. All other budgets that are still pending, we can take public comment on any of those budgets. None? Jack, do you have any closing?
No.
On this? Commissioner Gilman?
I do. I've reviewed the budget in detail, and I think we've all voiced a concern that I don't like what we're seeing. You know, we're not a balanced budget, and recognizing that this is the tentative budget, and so we're going to be asked to approve this portion of the tentative budget. My experience has been on this board that when we've done this in years past, that the real work really starts right now as we move toward a final budget. And so there's going to be a lot of work. I know, Hugh, you already have, but from your department, I can anticipate you guys are going to be crunching a lot of numbers and looking a lot of the issues that are facing us. So I'd like to make some comments for the record, just generally, and from my perspective. Our county is growing. We've made a lot of strides in our economic health in Story County over the last decade. But I'm going to tell you that I'm greatly concerned that the national and the global business climate is very uncertain at present. From my own personal experience, many of the large global companies are really sitting on their hands right now in the near term. And that happens for me, and I'm looking at it almost every day. So I'm going to have an untested assumption here that everybody's kind of waiting until after the elections that are coming in November. And it's going to take until after that, until we all as a community really have some definition on what we might anticipate happening over the next 4 years. So I believe there's a good chance that our economy will take off again after the election. Typically that happens during election years. And we're poised generally as a county, I think, to receive that benefit. But in my opinion, personal, that the next 9 to 12 months, we're going to be seeing a tremendous monetary drop-off in business. We've already talked about that here as we move forward. And for this reason, I think that prudence and good fiscal management dictates that we implement a balanced budget across the board in all of our department numbers, which are no higher than last year. Now, I know that'd be a challenge based on everything we've talked about here. We all want to grow, and we all have all the challenges going, and we're concerned about all the things happening. But in my opinion, at this table, we better not grow any further for this next 12 months than we did last year. If any department, and this is something that I think that I believe is true, and Hugh, Pat, I'd love to be coached if I'm wrong, but if any of the department has an urgent need or an unforeseen contingency arises here during the next 12 months, we can always issue a supplemental appropriation during the fiscal year. And in addition, should our economy and business activity pick up significantly during the fiscal year, we can issue supplemented allocations to various line items in the departments to allow for some of the growth that may actually take place. In the meantime, that I think our spending rate overall, we need as a community to be extremely cautious in our next moves and steps. So as we move toward a final budget, I hope everybody will take that into consideration. I am seeing a softness in my personal world of revenue stream generation.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Okay. So at this time, I'm looking for a motion to approve all the budgets that have not previously been approved.
I would make a motion to approve the tentative budgets on all the budgets that have not previously been approved.
I'll second that motion.
We moved in second to approve the tentative budgets for all items that haven't previously been approved. Is there any further comment on this? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to community development planning, item number 24 for possible action, licensing board second readings. Stacy.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, while Stacy comes up, I want to point to item D on this agenda item and just give you a little background information. This company, specifically Red Hawk Fire and Security, previously worked in our county without benefit of appropriate licensing. It took a bit of a struggle. They're back. They were fined significantly for the process, and they paid willingly. So I just want the record to reflect that these are not privileged licenses, so there is really no path to not approve, but there are the clear expectations that they will be watched carefully, that they maintain their necessary certifications and appropriate authorizations to perform work in their field, and that we would not hesitate to use the show cause clause that we have available to us under our ordinance should we need to.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Whitten. Stacy.
Stacy Vocuneri for the record. For our April 4th approval letter, Story County Building Department has inspected and found that the following businesses meet code requirements necessary to operate in the county. A through N, and I'll read those for you. A is 3D Concrete, and they are an in-county business on 655 Crew Drive. It's a rock quarry. B, Frank M. Booth. C, Horex Engineers, Inc. D, the aforementioned Red Hawk Fire and Security. E, SunState Equipment Company. F, Synergy Construction. G, Nefab Packing West, LLC. H, Damon Industries, doing
Mike?
Business. Pardon?
Sorry to interrupt you, Stacy. I'll take this with you.
I should have known.
Take time away from you, Stacy.
Nefab Packing West, LLC. H, Damon Industries, doing business as Service World. I, Adams & Garth, Inc. J, Airgas USA, LLC. K, Reds Fire and Flood. L, Tesla Motors Nevada Incorporated. That's also an in-county business. That's a service center down at 420 USA Parkway. M, Production Innovation, and N, EC Company. That's
very good.
Any questions?
I don't have any questions. Somebody said Damon Industries, an old longtime Reno family whose brother was basketball coach here in Virginia City back in the Gallagher days.
That looked like Damon.
Yeah. So, anyway, we get a motion to approve items A through N.
I would move to approve items A through N.
I'll second that motion.
Moved and second to approve second readings for licensing, items A through N. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. That's it. 14 licenses. 26 on the for the first reading under consent. So at least we're getting a lot of companies that are participating. All right. Moving along now to item number 25. This is public comment. Ms. Bard, come on down.
Red Hawk, thank you very much. Gary, I think it was close to 60. I'll check.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. I want to thank on behalf of Andrea Daly and myself, Marshall and Pat, and Denny just left, for the help and the support that she gave us for Big Bonanza on Saturday. Marshall, you supported the request to the county, and Pat came up with a way to fund the $1,500, which made all the difference in the world. to us being able to put on, you know, the event as nice as it was. Pat, you gave us the use of the entire parking lot, which was wonderful, as well as had your folks give us the cones and the crime scene tape or whatever that's called. And then Denny gave us the sawhorses and, you know, the road closed signs. We have heard nothing but oh my gosh, and wonderful things from the people that came. As I was telling Denny, it wasn't just a wonderful event for those of us here in Virginia City who already know and love Peppers, but it brought up a large number of people from Reno that hadn't been up here in a while, and they're part of the art environment down there, and they were just, you know, they were happy to be there and just enthralled with the building and the facility, and it just reintroduces Piper to a new group of donors. This community does a great deal to support itself, but there's also a great deal of donor fatigue because we continue, all of the organizations, repeatedly go to the same generous, you know, few folks to help fund these things, and God love you, but you've been supporting it for a long time and will continue, but we need to expand the base, the donor base, if you will, not just for Pipers, but for our other community organizations. So again, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for those, all of us that worked on that event. I hope to see more of that type of events, and we hope not to have to come back and ask to be mailed out.
And before Nicole leaves, I want to thank her and Andrea. You guys were, it's always great to work with local people with local solutions. I mean, you know, life is full of challenges. Those are what we get paid to do. But when you bring solutions with you and requests, I would tell you if Denny were here right now, he'd probably be jumping up at the mic to say, it was your request that taught us a new use for that parking lot that we're working at trying to negotiate into our plans for special events. So it was a pleasure working with you.
No, it was. We were delighted with the quick and the quickness of the response because we were literally at the 11th hour. So again, thank you.
Yeah, well, it was a job well done, and it was nice to see that building full, you know, of guests. Well, very well done, very well organized. Yeah. So. I'm not much of an opera goer, but it was still fun to attend the event. Any other public comment? Meeting's adjourned.
Opera.
Big bonanza.